Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 20th of November. Our guest this hour says, I think basically we have way, way, way too much drunk driving in Wisconsin, and passing tougher laws is one part of the puzzle. On average, the last 10 years, we've had an average of 200 fatalities a year in drunk driving crashes. So Representative Jim Mott, a Republican from Mequon, authored several bills that would enact tougher drunk driving laws in the state. What has he introduced? What has passed the Assembly? What awaits passage by the Senate? What do you think the penalty should be for first-time offense? What about second, third, fourth? Why is Wisconsin the only state where first-offense drunk driving is not a crime? This is one of these issues that I think people have strong opinions on, and we certainly welcome your phone calls during our conversation with Jim Mott. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email, talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, if you would like to leave messages there, we would like to hear from you, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Representative Jim Mott, nice to talk to you again. Hi.
Good afternoon, Kathleen. Great to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Those figures that you cite are really astounding, that we have 200 fatalities a year in this state and have for 10 years in drunk driving crashes. We have a problem.
Yeah, isn't that really is something when you think about it. And the numbers fluctuate a little bit, Kathleen, from year to year. But, you know, basically you go back over the last 10 years, we've had about 200 people a year killed in drunk driving crashes in Wisconsin. Sometimes it's the drunk driver themselves. Sometimes it's an innocent person completely, you know, walking down the road or on their bicycle or in an oncoming car. I don't have statistics on what the breakdown is on the actual drunk driver killing themselves or killing someone else, but it's obviously a substantial number of people. And I would suspect, just looking at the news stories that are out there, that well over 50% of the people killed in drunk driving crashes are not the drunk driver, but someone else that is killed either in the car with them or somebody in another vehicle or a pedestrian or a bicyclist.
Right. Is there something, Jim, about the culture of this state that we don't educate people that it may not be a good idea, or in fact it may be a really bad idea, to be drinking and driving at all? Is there something about the beer history, manufacturing in this state, the number of taverns, just sort of a Wisconsin drinking culture that we need to look at?
I think that's probably part of it, and of course that's a tough one to evaluate.
Right.
I mean, our laws are tougher today than they were 20 or 30 years ago. I do remember as a youngster, you know, reading articles in a newspaper, like on New Year's Eve, you know, was kind of looked at as a joke, that you're going to wake up the next day with a hangover and that these are things you can do to stop the hangover, you know, and there wasn't a lot of emphasis put on the dangers of drunk driving back then. It was more looked upon as, you know, kind of, hey, it's a good time and that's part of our state's culture. I do think we've come a long, long way since those days, and yet still, if you look at the number of arrests and convictions for drunk driving in Wisconsin and the number of crashes, we've got a long, long way to go, I believe.
You've introduced a number of bills. Tell me why this particular issue is near and dear to you.
Well, I guess just because growing up in Wisconsin and just seeing the carnage on the roads, I know when I first ran for office in 2006, that was one of the bullet points that I put on my campaign literature.
Really?
Was tougher sentences for drunk drivers and repeat offenders. And, you know, I don't know, you know, that's changed. I don't think we've certainly not done a lot since 2006. The legislature did pass a package of drunk driving legislation back in 2009. It's known as Act 100, which is why ignition interlocks are required now for many convicted drunk drivers. It's why fourth offense is a felony if it's within 5 years of the third offense. So we have done some things. I just don't think we've done nearly enough.
Mm-hmm. This bill, to my understanding, has passed the Assembly but not the Senate yet, making first-time offenders appear in court in all counties, not just in some. Has that passed the Assembly?
We did pass that in the Assembly last week or the week before. We passed it on a voice vote. There was no opposition. And we're just waiting for the Senate to act on it now, which, of course, they won't be able to do until the earliest would be January when they're back in session again. So we did our done our work in the Assembly on that bill.
Mm-hmm. And are we? I read somewhere that we're the only state in the whole country where first offense drunk driving is not a crime. Is that true?
That is correct. It's a criminal offense in all other states. In Wisconsin, it's considered a civil forfeiture. We sometimes see it compared to getting a speeding ticket. Anybody who thinks it's not that serious of an issue, like a speeding ticket maybe, it's like a really, really bad speeding ticket. First offense, even though it's not criminal, by the time you look at the fines and possibly if you have to hire a lawyer or want to hire a lawyer, and also the insurance, your insurance rates going up, when all is said and done, you know, you're talking about easily $1,000 out of pocket. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's not something to be taken seriously. It is, but it's still a civil forfeiture. It's not a crime.
Should it be?
Well, I did one of the bills that I introduced initially. We would have made first offense criminal at 0.15 and above, a blood alcohol concentration of 0.15 and above. The limit for being OWI is 0.08. So I thought, as maybe a starting point, we would say, well, people who are really seriously impaired, and 0.15 is seriously impaired, we could make that a criminal offense. Ran into a couple of problems on it. One problem is if you take the same offense and in one circumstances it's a criminal offense, which is treated quite differently from a civil forfeiture, and in another case, say at a BAC of 0.14 and below, it would be a civil forfeiture. I think our judicial system might run into some problems with that. At least that's what I was told. And so I scaled back on that one. That particular bill, though, did pass as amended. It's another one that we passed a couple of weeks ago. Ultimately, what we're doing in that bill is second offense would be criminal in any case. Right now in Wisconsin, if your second offense is more than 10 years after the first offense, it goes back to being a civil forfeiture. So then if this bill, if the Senate acts on it, second offense will be criminal in all cases. And we also made fourth offense a felony no matter when it happens, even if it's more than 5 years after the third offense. So that bill passed, but I did have to amend and take out the 0.15 being a criminal offense. And I think I want to work on that one some more. I think there is a way to take first offense more seriously. But the other thing, Kathleen, is I'm not sure if among the public there's support to make first offense criminal, even at 0.08. What we oftentimes hear from people is, well, you know, somebody's 21 years old and they have one beer too many and they get up to 0.085 and suddenly they've got a criminal offense on their record that stays with them for the rest of their life. So there is a little, I can understand that argument that mm-hmm. anybody can make a mistake. On the other hand, every other state in the country says, this is a serious enough of a mistake, it's a criminal offense.
Right, you could hurt somebody, you could kill somebody.
And many crashes involve people who have not been previously convicted. So we oftentimes think, well, first offense, you know, this argument, anybody can make a mistake. And yet the statistics show, the studies show, that by the time someone is arrested for their first offense, they probably have driven impaired as much as 70 or 80 times.
Oh, my gosh, really?
First offense does not mean that's the only time that person drove drunk. It's the one time they happen to be caught.
Woo. Do you anticipate any problems with the bills that have passed the Assembly going through the Senate?
It's hard for me to speak for them. Senator Darling has introduced most of the same bills in the Senate, and I know she's pushing to get them passed over there, but it's a separate house of the legislature, so I can talk to them over there, but as far as what they do, that's, you know, there's checks and balances in our legal system, our system of laws, and that's one of them. We have to go through two houses of the legislature. So I certainly am hopeful because I think there's strong bipartisan support for the four bills that we have passed so far in the Assembly. And meanwhile, I'm continuing to work on the other four to try to get those through the Assembly as well.
Does one of those deal with these ignition interlock devices, Representative Ott?
Right, and that's another bill we passed in the Assembly 2 weeks ago. the ignition interlock portion of our law was a part of that 2009 bill that was passed in the legislature. And by the way, in the assembly, that package passed by a vote, I think it was like 96-1. And I voted for it, certainly, because it was going in the right direction. I didn't feel it went far enough, but it was going in the right direction. I strongly supported it. One of the parts of that bill was that any repeat offender in Wisconsin has to have an ignition interlock installed on their automobile, and first-time offenders at blood alcohol concentrations of 0.15 and above would have to have ignition interlocks installed on their automobile. And now that's, you may say, well, isn't that the same issue with first time becoming a criminal offense? 0.15, well, the ignition interlock is not a criminal versus a civil forfeiture issue. So it's not, we're not dealing with quite the same thing. But at any rate, first time offenders have to have the ignition interlock if their BAC is above 0.15 or above. There was a problem, though, that we realized. We call it the ignition interlock loophole, and that the way the law was written, we didn't want people putting the ignition interlocks on their automobiles while their license was expired or revoked, I should say, and then having the car sit there for 6 months with an ignition interlock and it didn't make any difference. So the law was written such that the ignition interlock would be installed when the license was reinstated. And that works fine for people who obey their revocation order. Mm-hmm. But what we found is that some drivers, and a significant number of them, drive without their license. Uh-huh. So they lose their license for being convicted of drunk driving. They're supposed to have an ignition interlock, but they drive without the license before the license is reinstated. If they're stopped for a traffic violation, they will be cited for driving without a driver's license, without a valid license, but the ignition interlock order would not be in effect as yet. And actually, the penalty for not installing the ignition interlock is a criminal misdemeanor. It's more serious, considerably more serious, than simply driving without a license. So one of the bills we passed a couple of weeks ago says that as soon as the order for the ignition interlock is in place, it will be in place at the time it's issued, not at the time that the license is reinstated, so that if the person decides to drive before their license is reinstated and they're stopped, they will be ticketed for driving without a license, but they also will be cited for driving without the ignition interlock. So I think that bill went a long ways toward clearing up that ignition interlock loophole. This also has to be passed by the Senate.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to finish this hour thinking I should just ride the bus.
Well, you got to be careful when you get off the bus, though, these days. I mean, you hear about drunk drivers driving up onto the sidewalk and hitting utility poles and so on.
Right.
So that's part of the tragedy of this whole thing. You know, you oftentimes think, well, you're more likely to see drunk drivers out late at night. And if you're not out late at night, you're not as threatened by them. Well, you heard about Steve
True
getting
True,
hit
yeah.
by a drunk driver at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
A couple of weeks, or maybe it was last month sometime, a drunk driver crashed into a house at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and injured the homeowner.
Oh.
So, unfortunately, this is a problem that you can run into at any time. And again, it's not just being in your automobile. It can be, you hear pedestrians getting hit, you hear bicyclists getting hit by drunk drivers as well. So I do feel we have a problem that definitely needs a lot of addressing.
Let's hear from the audience. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our guest is Representative Jim Ott. He is from Mequon. He has introduced several bills designed to deter drunk driving. The statistics in Wisconsin are extremely alarming. And as we said during the course of the conversation so far, we are the only state where first offense drunk driving is not a crime. He did pass through the assembly a bill. It awaits passage in the Senate now, too, that first-time offenders will have to appear in court in all counties, not just in some counties. And we're looking at second offenses, third, fourth offenses. Why why is it that we've had so many fatalities a year and drunk driving crashes in Wisconsin? Really, a couple questions. What is it that we need to do as people in this state to keep people from drinking and driving? Because it does, everybody knows that. If you have, for me, it's like a glass of wine, a half glass of wine. I know I shouldn't be in a car. But what makes people think that they're able to do that, to get this huge vehicle that can hurt people and they're impaired in their driving? And then the second question, of course, is how do we deal with this legally? How do we keep people who are so impaired off the road because they're clearly a substantial danger to themselves and to other people? 800-486-8655. We'll take more phone calls. Well, we'll take the first call on this hour in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for Jim Ott. And we go to Stella in Sturgeon Bay, our first caller. Hi, Stella.
Hi. Jim, I want first off, I want to commend you for what you're doing. It's very long overdue and desperately needed to have much more severe penalties. And in response to your questioning, to your asking for public input on criminalizing first offense, and you gave the example of a 21-year-old who gets drunk and drives and gets and is apprehended and has a criminal record for the rest of his life or her life, that's a choice they made. And they chose to, and they, you know, if they only endangered their own life or their own well-being, their own physical, wholeness, that would be one matter, but it isn't. They endanger other people's lives and other people's physical well-being and physical, making other people disabling other people from severe injuries. And they have, you know, no one has the right to do that.
Jim.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you, Stella. And I'll tell you, if I was in a situation to make a choice, and we couldn't have any gradation, like at the 0.15 and above is more serious than below 0.15. You know, if I would say criminalize first offense or not, I would say yes, criminalize first offense. Like I said, I don't know if there's enough support overall to get something like that done right now. And it's not just a matter of the legislature not wanting to do it. The legislature really reflects the view that, you know, the will of the public. And here's a part of the problem. There's a lot of people that think you can get up to 0.08 or 0.15 or in any impaired state by simply having two beers or two glasses of wine. And there may be cases where that could happen. A small person on an empty stomach who would take two drinks very fast, you know, you might be able to get up to 0.08 in those circumstances. But for most people, you know, we're talking about people who are drinking a lot. You know, the Department of Transportation has pretty interesting tables on their website. And so for a person my size, I'm over 200 pounds, you know, I would have to drink like five beers in an hour. And that's pretty quick. That's really drinking very fast, and it's drinking a lot. And in order to get up to 0.08, so when you hear about people at 0.15 or 0.18 or 0.2, these are people who've drank a lot, and yet there still are people who think that, you know, a couple of drinks and, hey, you could get a ticket for OWI, and for the most part, that is not the case. But that's part of the reason some hesitancy on the part of people to go along with criminalizing first offense in all cases. But I do agree with you, Stella.
Thank you, Stella, for the call. Joanne, West Dallas, hi.
Hi, thank you, Kathleen, and thank you, Mr. Ott. I have lost a family member to a drunk driver, but the comment that I wanted to share was I have a cousin who lives in Japan since college, and I just saw him recently. We were talking about the drunk driving laws here compared to there, and he said our laws are a joke. He said in Japan, on the first offense, you lose your license for life, and they call your employer. You can lose your job. They keep your car. You don't get your car back. And he said nobody drives drunk there. He said there's a lot of alcoholism there, but they either use public transportation or a designated driver, but they know the consequences are so severe that nobody even risks it. And I know that's never going to pass the legislature here, but it does seem like our laws are a slap on the wrist at best.
Mm-hmm. You're right, Joanne. And, you know, the example of what you see in some other countries and even some other states where you have less drunk driving in Wisconsin, I understand that passing tougher laws is not going to make the problem go away. But I do believe there is a deterrent effect from having sterner penalties for drunk driving. And that's really the reason that I've introduced the legislation, and I'm trying to get it enacted into law because I do think it would have a positive effect as far as road safety is concerned. And that's the ultimate goal. We're not trying to lock more people in jail or take their cars away or give them stiffer fines. It's a matter of making the laws tougher so that people take the driving impaired situation more seriously. But you're right. There, you look at another country like Japan, and the penalties are incredibly more stern than ours.
Mm-hmm. Joanne,
thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you, Joanne. Thanks for the call. So Japan is not an anomaly, Jim. There are other countries that may have laws that are equally as severe.
Right, and I haven't done a thorough study of the laws in other countries, Kathleen. I've been more looking at other states because I think that's more what we can relate to in Wisconsin. And for example, there are four states in the United States where second offense is a felony. Right now in Wisconsin, it's not a felony until fourth offense, and that's if it occurs within 5 years of the third. And if I can get the bill passed in the Senate, fourth offense will be a felony in all cases. But you look at the difference, you know, how many states second offense is a felony or third offense is a felony, and we're working on trying to get fourth offense to be a felony in all cases in Wisconsin. So compared to other states, our laws for the most part are more lenient.
Tom in Door County, hello.
Good afternoon.
Hi,
Three
Tom.
Points. Number one, since 1982, we've enacted stiffer penalties on four different occasions. After every one of those occasions, the penalties or the number of convictions has never declined. Number two, I defy Mr. Ott to tell us who made the study that showed that first offenders have been driving for 70, 80 times while impaired. Number three, if you really want to do something, Mr. Ott, what you would do, you would start out at all sporting events, the Packers, the Badgers, the Brewers, the Bucks, no alcoholic consumption, period. You want to really do something, Mr. Ott? No consumption of more than two drinks at any bar. But you wouldn't do that because that politically would put you know where.
All right, Tom, I'm not sure what has you so incredibly upset about this. Do you want to respond to this? Have we seen a lot of stiffer penalties since 1982, Jim?
I don't think our penalties are that much stiffer now than they were in 1982. I mean, obviously, they are sterner. There's no question about that. I don't think they've gone far enough. You know, as far as you're restricting alcohol consumption at a public event, you get to the point where you really are trampling on people's freedoms. I mean, there's a lot of people that drink socially. There's a lot of people that drink responsibly. Not everybody who drinks is a drunk driver. And so to go and say, well, you can't have more than two drinks in public, to say we can't serve alcohol at Packers and, you know Brewers games, I think what you'd be doing there is you're going after a lot of people who aren't the problem. We're trying to get at the people who are a problem here. And anybody who thinks that, you know, passing tougher laws isn't going to make any difference, I would beg to differ with that.
Thanks, Tom, for your call. Jerry Menasha, hello.
Yes, thank you, Representative Ott. I so support everything you are trying to do at this point because I'm not a native of Wisconsin, and when I first moved here 36 years ago, I was shocked at the fact that nobody could walk across the street without a can of beer in their hands. I've never seen so much drinking in all my life, and it certainly hasn't subsided, but then that's the culture here, and it still hasn't changed. But until some of your very fine and sensible bills become law, I urge you not to support raising the speed limit on our major highways. Because that's going to be one more factor in causing more crashes out there, especially if driving impaired. And I would like to see and I've been screaming for this for the last 15 years, a tax on beer that will increase the police presence on our roads to stop these drunken drivers.
Thanks, Jerry, for your call. Jim.
Well, I appreciate the comments. Unquestionably, you know, the caller has some good points there. As far as raising the speed limit, there's a lot of people who drive very responsibly, and whether they're driving 65 or 70, that's not the factor. A drunk driver can be driving 60 miles an hour and can be an issue. The issue is driving impaired. As far as raising the beer tax right now, I'm not in support of that because, again, there's most people drink responsibly, and so what are we asking them to pay for the people who don't drink responsibly? I'm more concerned with getting the drunk drivers to pay for the behavior that they're doing, or else to have them stop doing it, which would obviously be my first choice. Kathleen, I'm not against drinking. People, you know, I just saw an article in the paper on Sunday. We have 100 wineries in Wisconsin right now, and we have a lot of microbreweries and some larger breweries as well. And most people, I would say the majority of people, are customers, and they do so responsibly. I mean, a person can drink as much as they want in their own home. I don't encourage that, obviously. That causes additional problems, other problems for the
right.
family. But the thing we're trying to do is say, if you're going to drink to the point that you're impaired, don't get behind the wheel. There's two specific acts that are involved in drunk driving. One is drinking to the point that the person is impaired, and the other is getting behind the wheel and then trying to drive somewhere. So I support safe ride programs. I support designated drivers. I support bars that want to put a breathalyzer as people are walking out so they can see if they're impaired or not. There's a lot we can do short of the person getting behind the wheel impaired.
Right. Yeah, thank you so much. Has there been any group or groups that would have an organized opposition to your bills, Jim?
You know, not the bills that have been passed so far, Kathleen. I don't think the four bills that we actually have had enacted. I know the Tavern League is oftentimes mentioned as a group that's fighting tougher drunk driving laws, and they have to a point. From what I could tell, they did not oppose any of the bills that we have passed. The four bills we passed, they registered as neutral, and at least in conversations I had, they're not opposed to that. They weren't opposed to those bills. I do believe if we tried to criminalize first offense, they probably would be opposed to that. One of the bills I have that probably going to be really tough to move forward, partly because it has a very high fiscal note with it, is making third offense a felony. I suspect they would be opposed to that, but I can't speak for them, for them on that. Also, the other thing that's kind of interesting, Kathleen, is that, again, I say this is a bipartisan issue. There's bipartisan support. There's bipartisan opposition. At least one of my theories is that more of the opposition is coming from outstate areas in Wisconsin. In Milwaukee or Madison, I mean, you could take a cab or you could take a bus home from the bar, or you might be able to walk home.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're, say, in northern Wisconsin or parts of western Wisconsin, you know, maybe you live 15 miles away, and the only way to get there is by automobile, and the only way to get home is by automobile. And so you find a little bit more, I think, opposition from certain areas of the state rather than necessarily specific groups.
Let's go to Dave in Wanakee. Hi, Dave.
Hi. It seems like there's no differentiation between people who recognize that they're driving while impaired and pull themselves over and being pulled over by the police. Does your bill do anything to differentiate those people?
There are people who are pulling themselves over. What do you mean, Dave? They're driving.
Well, they pull themselves over,
yeah.
And then perhaps they left their lights on or they left their keys in the ignition. It can be any number of things. They will get, if they're sleeping in their car, they'll get questioned by the police, and they can do drunk driving if they're found to have, the keys available and they're.
Uh-huh.
They don't pass the test.
Is this happening
to me to be if you don't treat them differently than someone who gets pulled over while driving, who does not pull themselves
up. All right. Are there many people in this category, Jim?
You know, it's hard to say, Kathleen. There's nothing in my bills that differentiates the two, because the thing is, if you're driving and you pull yourself over and fall asleep and you're impaired, you had to drive impaired in order to get up, to get to that spot. You know, my bills, the goal is to keep people from getting in the car and driving impaired, because, you know, how do you differentiate between somebody who went a little bit too far before they decided to pull over and fall asleep and they run into somebody, and somebody who goes 5 miles and pulls over and falls asleep? And I think there, you know, you might have an issue with what the arresting officer, how they would treat that, and possibly how the district attorney would treat that in charging. But that's a very difficult thing to differentiate in legislation. I mean, you would almost have to produce a separate bill that says if you're sleeping in your car alongside the road and you're impaired, it's less serious than if you were stopped 5 minutes earlier while you were still awake and driving.
Well, wouldn't you know when you got in the car whether or not you were impaired?
Well, that's a good question. And I think that many people probably do know that. I think there's a human tendency to say, well, you know, I think I can make it home. I've driven like this before. I never had any problems. And obviously, you've got addiction issues involved with people who drive drunk as well. Many of them are alcoholics. They have an alcohol problem. And the issue is, once they start drinking, the judgment goes out the window. But the thing is, you know, if you got to get a mindset that you do not drive when you've drunk too much.
Right.
And that's, you know, there's more to this than just passing tougher laws. I realize that.
Thanks, Dave. Eugene and Viola. Hey, Eugene.
Good afternoon, Kathleen, to your guest. I think your guest already mentioned what I was going to say, that in the rural, Wisconsin is largely a rural state in a lot of cases. In the rural areas, small towns, the police officers don't monitor the local taverns. They are a small business, and they generally stay away from them unless there's problems there. And also, you've got long distances to go, so a lot of times it comes down to enforcement as far as the drunken driving is concerned. Police officers in a small town generally don't monitor your local taverns much.
You're right, Dave. There obviously are differences from locality to locality across Wisconsin. And honestly, there probably are some differences in the level of impairment as well. One of the things that I have found just in reading the reports and the crime reports in the newspaper is that many, many people who are stopped for OWI, they're not at 0.08 or 0.085. They'll be at 0.16 or 0.19 or something like that. So they're way over the legal intoxication limit. And I want to say the statistics I saw from the DOT in a recent study they did is that 82% of drunk drivers actually were above 0.10. So we're talking about people that are, for the most part, more than just a little bit over the limit.
Yeah. Thanks, Eugene, so much for your call.
I'm sorry, I call him Dave.
Okay. It's okay. Deborah in Madison, hi.
Hi. This is frustrating, especially since Representative Ott seems to have an understanding of some of the nature of the issue. We continue to make laws based on archaic information about the nature of problem drinking. Alcoholism is an addiction, and we know from brain science that addiction affects the ability to make judgments, to make decisions. It affects impulse control. And the person who has multiple drunk driving tickets, longer sentences isn't going to be a deterrent. The prisons are filled with people who have 5, 6, 7 drunk driving incidences, but they cannot get treatment, or there isn't even close to adequate treatment in our correction system. And after they get out, eventually they can get their license back, but they don't have to show any evidence of having had treatment. So the person with one drunk driving, I believe we should criminalize that first drunk driving, because that person may or may not have an addiction. But after that, we have to start seriously looking at, are we dealing with a medical issue or a criminal issue? Mm-hmm. Because as long as we criminalize addiction, then we're just going to fill up our prisons more and more.
Thanks, Deborah. Jim?
Well, we do have a provision in a law in Wisconsin that at least one time a person can use a treatment option to reduce their sentence. And this was for first-time offenders as well as criminal misdemeanor offenders, but not for felony offenders. When we passed the law a couple weeks ago that makes fourth offense a felony in all cases, we did make sure that that treatment option was available for the fourth-time offender so that if somebody hadn't used it as yet, they would have an opportunity to reduce their sentence if they went through a treatment program. But obviously, the issue of you can't have treatment programs available, and that's the only thing you have for people who have drunk driving problems. You also have to put some teeth in the law, and I do believe that that the law does have an effect, because I believe the statistics are something like 80% of first-time offenders don't reoffend. So for many people, getting that first citation does have a big impact on them, because they don't become second, third, or fourth. Unfortunately, too many people become second, third, or fourth. The other thing is, as we get to the really multiple repeat offenders, the prison time actually goes up pretty significantly in terms of minimum sentence. Right now, seventh, eighth, or ninth offense is a three-year prison sentence, mandatory minimum. 10th in a lifetime is a four-year mandatory minimum. So that's one of the things, you know, obviously, if people are in prison, I mean, the real problem, people, they're not driving while they're incarcerated.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Jim Ott is our guest this hour. We're talking about the legislation that he has put together. A couple of the bills have passed the Assembly and are waiting signature in the Senate. We're looking at the issue of drunk driving in Wisconsin, the toll it takes on people's lives, on their health, on their very life, actually, and why it has been so hard to have significant legislation passed in the state of Wisconsin, where we're falling short when we compare ourselves to other countries, to other states, to say nothing of other countries. So we're looking at, there's been a lot of debate about what happens with first-time offenders and whether or not it should be criminal, and a criminal offense, and what happens with other offenders, and how much of this is addiction, and there are just a whole host of issues. Why do people think they can drive? They get in cars and they can harm themselves and they can harm others, and what do we do about it legally? Here's our phone number. Our lines have been jammed, but you have many ways to get a hold of us. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, so use all of those ways of getting a hold of us. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls. Our guest, State Representative Jim Ott of the 23rd Assembly District, who is addressing drunk driving issues with laws that he has authored, and four of them have passed the Assembly. So it's a large issue in this state. And let's go back to phone calls. Ron in La Crosse is, no, our next caller, no, it isn't. It's, Ron in La Crosse. Hi.
Yeah, I'd just like to say I think the turning point came back about 6 years ago when the state's attorney general, Peg Lautenschlager, was arrested for drunken driving with a state vehicle. I mean, if that wasn't a wake-up call, I don't know what is. I mean, the top law enforcement officer in state government gets arrested for drunk driving. I'd say, that's quite a red flag.
A red flag for what? What was that a wake-up call for, Ron?
Well, people who drink it, well, it's part of the culture. I think maybe we need to change that culture a little bit. It's got to be refined. I mean, my own brother became an alcoholic. He was arrested more than once for drunken driving. Mm-hmm. And, he could have been hurt or killed somebody. Mm-hmm. Luckily, he didn't. But, he became an alcoholic. He was in detox ward in a local hospital twice.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, it's part of the culture. people who have a drinking problem probably use that statement a lot as an excuse. You know, so let's start with the drinking itself. And I think the problem with drinking and driving will tend to take care of itself. But when the state attorney general gets arrested
All right.
for drunken driving.
Yeah, we hear you. Thanks, Ron, very much for the call. I mean, he does point to this larger issue. This society really does have huge problems with alcohol abuse, with alcoholism. It is a disease, and it affects, as we well know, Jim, a lot of people.
You're right. You're absolutely right, Kathleen. And it cuts across all socioeconomic areas. It's not confined to poor people. It's not confined to middle class. It's not confined to wealthy.
Right.
The issue with alcoholism obviously strikes all segments of our society. And similarly, drunk driving affects all segments of our society. And like we say, many people with a drunk driving ticket, they do have an alcohol problem. But there are people, I believe, a significant number of people who, you know, maybe just like to go out and party a little bit and have that attitude that I'm not going to get caught. It's not going to be me.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes just have bad judgment. And that's why one of the reasons we introduced the bill, passed the bill that says first-time offenders must appear in court, it's not actually going to increase the penalties at all. But if you happen to live in one of those counties where you don't have to appear in court right now, you can simply send in your check or you can have your attorney go to court. Now the person themselves, again, if the bill is passed in the Senate, now the person themselves is going to have to stand before the judge. And I think that will have a bigger impact than simply writing a check and sending it off in the mail. And I don't know what the breakdown is in counties. I know in Ozaukee County, where I live, first-time offenders do have to appear in court, but I understand in Milwaukee County, first-time offenders don't have to appear in court. So the idea is, again, not to, you know, make the law so strict that it's unreasonable, but to have a deterrent effect. And that's one of the things we wanted to do with that bill, just to impress upon the person who's caught the first time the gravity of the road they may be heading down if they continue in that direction.
Right. Al in La Crosse, hi.
Yeah, this is a public health issue. And really, as a politician or administrator, all a person really does actually through the whole career is control various forms of energy. And I'm a positive thinker that people can actually make decisions based on evidence and based on what energy you want to have people allowed to use. For example, the speed limit increase is more energy and people maybe can't react in time. Drinking and driving, that's a different kind of energy, obviously, that can't be controlled when you're driving a vehicle. If you really want to stop the problem, the penalties have to be increased and the driving culture has to be addressed. Weapons in your pocket, obviously I'm going to make a political statement that's not in favor of concealed carry because it's really too much energy brought to a discussion or an argument. Instead of a fist fight, it's a gunfight.
Okay, thank you, Al, for all of your comments. Let's go to Claire in Baraboo. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for squeezing me in.
Sure.
I feel very strongly about this. Absolutely, these laws should be changed. And I could not believe it when that pennies per keg or whatever it was, beer tax, didn't even go through. Absolutely, liquor should have higher taxes, and the laws should be stricter. Look at how smoking is treated in our society right now. Taxes are sky high on cigarettes as a discouragement. You know, no smoking here, there, even outdoors. Why is this any different? You could have an accident one time is all it would take to kill somebody else if you drink too much. So, absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Claire. Jim?
Yeah, I guess we're talking about two different issues, raising the tax on beer and toughening up drunk driving laws. I guess if you obviously some people say, well, if you raise the tax on beer or wine or alcohol, you have more money to fight the problem. But if you don't make the laws tougher, the person paying the tax, I mean, the person who drinks, 10 or 12 or 15 beers at a setting, if they have to pay a nickel more in tax, it's probably not going to have a deterrent effect on them. But if they know that they drink those 15 beers and they go out on the road, they're subject to tougher penalties, I think that would have more of a deterrent effect. So, again, that's what we're after, is a deterrent effect.
Joel in Baraboo. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Joel.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm Steve, 56 years old, born and raised in Wisconsin, and I love to go to the occasional pub here and there myself. I don't understand when people have a good time, go to watch a ball game at a pub, and when they're going to go and leave, whether it's a party of four, five, six people, or if it's one single person, when you leave a pub, you have no clue whether you're impaired or not or what your blood alcohol content is. I would love to see more. I would love to see places have these portable devices on site where you could test yourself on the way out the door. If you're with a group of people, four, five, six people, you might think of it as fun and as a joke or whatever, but at least you would know walking out the door kind of where you're at.
Do you know of any places that do that, Joel?
No, I really don't. I'm sure there's an additional cost to have a breathalyzer on site, but I think it'd be a good idea. You'd know where you're at.
All right. What do you think, Jim? Breathalyzers on site.
Yeah, I've heard of a few places that do it. And Kathleen, I don't think it's just a matter of the cost. I think there's a liability issue as well, because you'd have to have the device monitored and calibrated so that it was accurate, so that if somebody walked out the door and they blew a .06 and then later on they're stopped and they're at .10 and then they say, well, you said I was okay for me to go out on the road, but because your device wasn't calibrated properly, I think that might be more of an issue there. There are some things that people can do to get an idea, at least. I mentioned the DOT website, and they have a table in there based on your weight and the number of drinks, what your blood alcohol concentration would come to. I think that anybody who, you know, normally goes out and has more than a couple drinks and then gets in their car, they ought to take a look at that chart and kind of get an idea where they might be. I know sometimes a state patrol will have a setup where you can breathe into the breathalyzer. I've been at the state fair already where they did this, and, you know, somebody having a few beers could go and breathe in the breathalyzer and get kind of an idea of where they're at. I think a lot of people can kind of get the feeling of when their judgment and their impairment is starting to go downhill.
Right.
And for most people, I think, you know, they have an idea in mind of how many drinks they might be able to have to get there. So there are things that you can do beyond just breathing in a breathalyzer, which I think we may see more of those at some point in public locations, but I don't think that's going to happen next week or next month.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, everybody, for all of your calls. Jim, thank you so much for being with us. We'll keep track of the bills, and thanks for your time, sir.
Always good to be with you, Kathleen. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. State Representative Jim Ott of the 23rd Assembly District, our guest this hour, and we were talking about Wisconsin's drunk driving laws. He's trying to make them tougher and has introduced several pieces of legislation, and several of them have passed the Assembly. And in January or sometime after January, they will be signed or not by the Wisconsin State Senate. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing this hour, and thanks to Robin as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio. Stay with us. We're going to have a fascinating conversation. For those who wanted to know more information about what's in all those paintings, 1,400 works of great art found in Munich, and the whole backstory is really compelling. Stay with us for hour two.